Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Gomez gets suspended sentence. An Odessa man convicted on one of three aggravated assault charges he faced in connection with a triple shooting received a suspended sentence Wednesday. It took an Ector County jury 2 hours to convict Pedro Antonio Gomez, 30, for his part in the non-fatal shooting of Juan Charlie Paez, and 45 minutes to give him a 10-year suspended sentence and a $7,500 fine. Judge James Rush of the 244th Ector County District Court told Gomez he'll be placed on 8 years probation, and should he violate that probation, he could end up serving up to 10 years in prison. Rush also ordered Gomez to submit a biweekly drug test during the first year of his probation. After the first year, it will be up to the judge or the probation department to determine how often he'll have to be drug tested. Gomez was charged with 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon after Elaine Gunter, Gilbert Carmona, and Paez were shot outside Gunter's home on West 5th Street. The jury acquitted Gomez on the charges pertaining to Gunter and Carmona, but convicted him on the count pertaining to Paez. Gomez has been facing a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years and up to a $10,000 fine. Carmona, Paez, and Gomez worked together in the oil field, and Assistant Ector County District Attorneys Kevin Schultz and Elizabeth Howard presented evidence they said showed Gomez was angry with Paez for several reasons. Not only did Paez owe him $50 to $75 for cocaine, but Gomez lost out on a $950 in wages because he couldn't work on days Paez called off from work. They alleged Gomez drove to the home on West 5th Street, July 21, 2018, with Antonio Herrera, knowing Herrera, 31, would shoot Paez for him because Paez had snitched on him in a case that sent him to prison about a decade earlier. Gunter, who was shot in the leg, and Carmona, who was shot in the stomach, were collateral damage, the prosecutors said. Under Texas law, even though a defendant may not have pulled the trigger, they can be found guilty of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon if they solicit, encourage, direct, aid, or attempt to aid another person in the commission of the offense. Carmona and Paez, who was shot in the scrotum, were on the state's witness list but did not testify during the trial, which began on Monday. During closing arguments, Schultz told jurors that in Gomez and Herrera's world, snitches get stitches, and they should not let the absence of Carmona and Paez impact them. The state prosecuted Gomez to send the message that people like him will be held accountable when innocent victims like Gunter are shot or when other regular citizens are put at risk, Schultz said. The shooting happened a short distance from West County Road. If we say anything else, we're empowering him and people like him to do it again, and God help us, Schultz said. Defense attorney Philip Wildman Jr. told jurors there is no question Herrera, who pleaded guilty and is serving 8 years in the case, is a bad guy. However, he argued, the state failed to prove their case against Gomez. Mere presence at the scene isn't enough, he said. Gomez, who had driven to Mexico following the shooting, turned himself into authorities after getting a call from the lead detective, Wildman said. Wildman reminded jurors his client testified he didn't know his gun was in the car that night, and the last thing he told Herrera before getting out of his car to talk out his issues with Paez was for him to stay in the car. He only drove away from the scene because he was freaked out, Wildman said. It wouldn't have made sense for him to leave Herrera at the scene with a still-loaded gun and he wouldn't have been safe to stay to render aid after giving Herrera the keys to his car. I think you can look at Pedro and see he's not the kind of guy who's going to shoot somebody for $950 or even $75 or $50, Wildman said, referring to the alleged lost wages and cocaine debt. Antonio developed the intent to shoot those people way after Pedro got out of the car. Wildman said Herrera had to look for the gun because Gomez didn't remember he had the gun in the car, let alone hand it to him. Pedro had no intention for any of this to happen, he said. During her portion of closing arguments, Howard dismissed Wildman's argument. Sure, he's not a person who would shoot somebody for $950, but he is the type of person who would bring a known violent gang member who has shot someone in the past to shoot somebody, Howard said. You can bet your bottom dollar he knew exactly what Herrera, his lifelong friend, his childhood buddy, was capable of, Howard told jurors. Herrera likely thought they were gullible and would believe him when he testified that gang members no longer live by the snitches get stitches credo. Wildman was absolutely correct when he said mere presence alone wasn't enough to convict Gomez, Howard said. But Pedro Gomez started the fight. He drove to the fight, Howard said. He was the initiator, instigator, the organizer, she said. If he didn't know what was going to happen, why did he tell Gunter to get inside the house three times, Howard said. He knew exactly what was going to happen. He knew when Tony got out of the car he was going to rock and roll, she said. During the punishment phase of the trial, Wildman told jurors to place his client on probation, noting he has spent most of his last 4 years in the community without violating the terms of his release on bond. He also noted Gomez has maintained employment. Gomez was 26 at the time of the incident, and his only arrest that time was for failing to pay fines associated with a speeding ticket. A second arrest was a case of mistaken identity. Howard told the jury that if they were considering placing Gomez on probation, it should be for 10 years, the maximum allowable. If considering a prison sentence, she asked for a 5-year sentence. She asked them if they were comfortable running into Gomez at Walmart tomorrow. When Gomez testified during the punishment phase of his trial, he acknowledged that he wasn't required to drug test or meet with pretrial service officers for more than a year because of COVID-related restrictions. Howard pointed out that Gomez has chosen over the years to associate with felons and gang members, and he's chosen to use drugs. He has probably never been arrested despite a cocaine habit because he's good at hiding things, she said. Pedro Gomez is not a victim of his circumstances. Pedro Gomez chose to go there that night, and he chose to bring Antonio Herrera. He chose to do all of the things that led him to being here today, Howard said. The prosecutor pointed out that Gomez has never apologized for his part in what happened that night or for not going to the police immediately after the shooting. There was no remorse, she said. Without Gomez, we wouldn't be here. That's the simple truth of it. Literacy Coalition moves forward. There has been a dearth of data over the years on literacy in the Permian Basin, but the newly formed Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin now has the information and is working toward a solution. The coalition's three founding funders were the FMH, Abel Hanger, and Brown Family Foundations. They have since gotten the Permian Strategic Partnership on board as a founding funder. Executive Director John Trischetti III said this would give them a longer runway. Trischetti also is the vice president of the Midland ISD Board of Trustees. They know that this is something that you just don't turn around quick. So that first year, it was really important to get the study done, the needs assessment, because we knew that there was an issue. But the problem is that literacy, historically, it has been underfunded and under-researched. Outside of the K-12 space, there's really not a lot of great data on adult low literate or family literacy, Tricia D. said. The Literacy Coalition commissioned the American Institute of Research, AIR, to do a literacy needs assessment specifically for the Permian Basin region. The findings were shown at a literacy summit in Monahans. A second literacy summit will be held August 30th in Hobbs, New Mexico, to specifically address Eddy, Chavez, and Lee counties. There's little pockets here and there, especially in a region like we have in the Permian Basin, where it's very rural and very geographically isolated. So that first year was really about getting the needs assessment done, working with the Barbara Bush Foundation and their National Action Plan for Adult Literacy, and just kind of seeing what the hard data really is. Unfortunately, it was worse than we thought it was, which strangely justifies the risk that the foundations took in creating this organization. But when you start talking about a third of adults in the Permian Basin read below a third grade level, and in some of these counties it's as high as 50%, there's plenty of work to be done, and so it's just finding those organizations that are out there doing the work that people may not know about. There is a social stigma when it comes to adult literacy. They've made it to adulthood and kind of figured out a way to navigate through life. Maybe their spouses don't know. Maybe their employers don't know. So it's really just convincing them about solving the issue. It's going to improve your opportunity to get a better paying job. It will help your kids. You'll be able to read the notes that come home from school. You'll be able to read your kids' prescriptions from the doctor. It just affects so many things. So we want to be able to tear down some of those social stigmas and social barriers that exist, and hopefully engage them and encourage them and incentivize them in some way, whether that's the GED or a certification of some kind, welding or CDL truck driving, show them the greater value, Tricia D. said. Third grade or below is considered low literate. Illiterate is when you can't read anything. Low literate, which is what we really feel is the glass ceiling, is third grade or below, and about a third of adults in the Permian Basin are at that level, Tricia D. said. A lot of those organizations are run by volunteers and may not have a paid staff or a website, so it can be difficult to engage with them, Tricia D. said. But we want individuals to know that they're out there if they need that kind of assistance. And then the other side that we want to do is really fill in where there is no service at all, which we call literacy deserts where there is no service. How do we begin to build capacity to offer a service? Is it partnering with a civic group? Is it partnering with a church group? A chamber of commerce to try to be able to, especially in those geographically isolated areas, to be able to offer some sort of service, Tricia T. said. He added that a generation of students is being created that starts behind and stays behind. He said this means you have to prepare children for kindergarten and tackle adult literacy. Tricia D. said data shows that if you go into third grade below reading level, 3 out of 4 students won't catch up before graduation. Quick hits, vaccine and resource fair. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled vaccine clinics, ribbon cutting, and a resource fair today. Back-to-school vaccines for pre-K will be offered from 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. inside the ECHD building. Texas requires vaccines Tdap, polio, MMR, varicella, and Hep A. Must qualify for the TVFC vaccine and provide updated shot records. A ribbon-cutting ceremony on the opening of the new mobile unit will be at 2:30 p.m. There will be light refreshments and cookies for the showcase. The resource fair will be from 3 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. outside. COVID-19 vaccines for pediatrics are offered out of the mobile from 3 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Call 432-498-4141 extension 0 or visit tinyurl.com/54TSK5SK. Celebration! Chick-fil-A, 3805 East 42nd Street, has scheduled Ms. Ann Mefford 92nd birthday party from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. today. Call 432-550-7421 or visit tinyurl.com/MURP8XTT. ECUD Budget Workshop. The Ector County Utility District has scheduled the first budget workshop, which will impact the budget planning for ECUD from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. today. The meeting is open to the public. Call 432-381-5525 or email info@ecudwestodessatx.org. Cosplay Show Off. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled cosplay show off for all ages from 3:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. today in the basement activity room. Call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Tip a Cop Fundraiser. As Special Olympics Texas races into the final heats of summer sports, Odessa and Midland's Texas Roadhouse locations team up with local police to raise money for the statewide organization from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. today. The fundraiser is part of a statewide effort with dozens of other Texas Roadhouse locations holding fundraisers the same week. Police officers will help serve guests at the Tip a Cop event and collect donations. Visit texasroadhouse.com. Loop 338 traffic signal set to go live on Tuesday. The Texas Department of Transportation issued a press release that detailed traffic signals at two locations on Loop 338 will go into operation on Tuesday, August 2nd. The signals at West Yukon and at JBS Parkway will begin operating in red, yellow, green mode sometime during the day, the press release stated. Motorists are reminded to stay aware of their surroundings as traffic behavior will change with the signals in operation. Extreme caution is urged as motorists become accustomed to the new traffic control devices. The signal projects are designed to improve safety along the corridor. Simons Mobility Incorporated of Austin won the project with a low bid of a little more than $1 million. Local and state news roundup. Man indicted on attempted sexual assault of a child. A Universal City man has been indicted on solicitation and attempted sexual assault of a child charges. According to online Ector County District Court records, Texas Department of Public Safety investigators believe Eric Stubing, 25, solicited sex from someone he believed to be an underage boy via text on July 17, 2021. They further allege that Stubing arrived at a location to pick up the boy after communicating with him in a sexually explicit manner via text and on the phone and intended to sexually assault him. His actions amounted to more than mere preparation that tended but failed to affect the commission of the offenses intended, the indictment reads. Stubing was indicted July 11th on one count of online solicitation of a minor, sexual conduct, and one count of attempt to commit sexual assault of a child. He was booked into the Ector County Jail on July 17th on the solicitation count and released the same day after posting a $25,000 surety bond. Pickett's man pleads guilty to possession of child pornography. Alpine. On Wednesday, Miguel Angel Ortega, 39, of Pecos, pleaded guilty to one count of possession of child pornography. According to court documents, on January 4th, a search warrant was executed on Ortega's cellular phone. Approximately 54 videos containing child pornography of prepubescent children was located. A sentencing date has not been set. Ortega faces up to 20 years in prison. A federal district court judge will determine any sentence after considering the U.S. sentencing guidelines and other statutory factors. Ortega remained in federal custody since his arrest on January 5th. U.S. Attorney Ashley C. Hoff of the Western District of Texas and Homeland Security Investigations Special Agent in Charge Frank Barola, El Paso Division, made the announcement. HSI, the Texas Department of Public Safety, and the Pecos Police Department are investigating the case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Lance Kennedy is prosecuting the case. Today's obituaries for July 28th. Andrew J. Greenfield, Jr. was born during the Great Depression on January 7, 1930, in Merkle, Texas, to Andrew J. Greenfield, Sr. and Laureen Greenfield. He is preceded in death of his wife of 64 years, Twyla Joe, his sister Peggy, and his brother Billy Greenfield. He is survived by his son Daryl J. and daughter-in-law Cindy Greenfield, son Lance Cade Greenfield, daughter Debbie Darland, daughter Tiffany Greenfield, two grandchildren, and several nephews and nieces, as well as two great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held at 9 a.m. Monday, August 1st, at the Frank Wilson Funeral Home in Odessa. Services will be at 10 a.m. in the chapel, with burial to follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Contributions to Odessa Christian School would be appreciated in lieu of flowers. Lou Jean Leakes, 67, of Monahans, passed away on July 24th in Midland. Visitation will be Friday, July 29th at Harkey Funeral Home from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Funeral service will be Saturday, July 30th at the Harkey Funeral Home Chapel with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Burial will follow at the Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Lou Jean was born to John and Patsy Ford on May 16th in Monahans. She married Harold Leakes of Monahans. Lou Jean is preceded in death by her parents, John and Patsy Ford, and brothers Gary and Bobby Ford. Lou Jean is survived by her husband Harold, son Don Hoover, and wife Christy, and their children, Caden, Reagan, and Alice, daughters Brandy O'Keefe and her son Peter, and daughter Sandy Hoover, and life partner Ray Cummins and her daughter Carrie Self, and her husband Stephen and their daughter Adeline, and aunt Nora Ford, as well as several cousins. Jimmy Ray Beauchamp. Jimmy Ray Beauchamp, 86, of Odessa, died Monday, July 25th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 11 a.m. Friday, July 29th, at River of Hope Christian Fellowship. Pastor Shay Lane is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Travis Lester Jarrett Jr., 58, of Odessa, died Tuesday, July 26th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 11 a.m. July 29th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Pastor Ty Koch is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Sky Heartland Mace, 45, of Colorado City, Texas, died Wednesday, July 20th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Funeral Home of Midland.
Midland Reporter Telegram, Sports. High school football. Trinity looks to build on last year's success, by Oscar Leroy. There weren't many people who thought the Trinity football team would have much success last year. The Chargers had a new head coach in Greg Koch, and the majority of the team's roster was made up of either freshmen or sophomores. But it's safe to say the Chargers exceeded expectations as they finished 6-4 and went 5-1 in District 1 of Taps six-man and made the playoffs. Trinity will look to build on what it did last season when it begins preseason practices on Monday. There's no doubt that the Chargers will feel good about themselves and their chances to have a good season when they hit the field. We surprised a lot, and I think we surprised a lot of people within our own building, Koch said. I think they expected that we would win one or two games last year, and we ended up winning six, and we ended up in the district 5-1. We had a good year. The confidence and leadership and just the kids believing in themselves and having fun together grew. It was about not worrying about what happened yesterday or about the play before. It was about just going out and making the next play work. The Chargers only lost three seniors from last year's team and have around nine letter winners returning. While the team will again be young, with at least 10 of their 14 players being sophomores or freshmen, Koch believes that a culture and identity has been established. As young as we are, these kids are just molding, Koch said. We've got an eighth grade group coming in that's amazing, and we'll have them next year. We're going to keep reloading as we move on. I'm excited about them. Even though we're losing some key players, we've been able to put some other guys in key positions. The Chargers lost Taps Division I All-State Honorable Mention utility back, defensive back, and kicker Hagen Renfro, and All-State Honorable Mention linebacker Andrew Varner. They also returned second-team All-State defensive lineman Monty Max Campbell and second-team All-State spread back Jude Varner. One key change for the Chargers is that they will have a new offensive coordinator as Thomas LaFrell takes over for David Willis, who was hired to be the head football and boys basketball coach at Midland TLCA. It's great that the guys get to move on and become head coaches at other places. It says a lot about this program, Koch says. The Chargers will also move to a new district in Taps Division II. They will now be paired with Abilene Christian, Amarillo San Jacinto, Fort Worth Covenant Classical, Denton Calvary Academy, Kelver Harvest Christian Academy, and the Highland School Irving. It's a different group, but it's going to be a tough one, said Koch of the new district. Top four go to the playoffs. I think we have a good chance of being in the top four and top three, to tell you the truth. Staying healthy and keeping that same attitude that they had last year and this summer will be keys to where we end up. Our goal is to not just make the playoffs, it's to make a run, which I think is very possible.
Coughing upon waking up. Dear Dr. Roach, I have a question about having a cough upon waking up and within 30 minutes after eating. The worst thing is I won't stop coughing until a thick secretion from my stomach gets out. M-A-J-A. Answer, coughing first thing in the morning usually represents your body getting rid of secretions that have accumulated overnight. These may be from the nasal passages and sinuses or from the esophagus or stomach in people who have GERD or from the lungs. Thick secretions are more likely to be from the nasal passages and sinuses. Your regular doctor or ear, nose, and throat doctor might be able to help diagnose and treat the underlying condition, such as allergies or infection or smoking, that's causing these secretions in the first place. Since the cough occurs after eating as well, I suspect there might be a condition called vasomotor rhinitis, which is a not uncommon cause of cough.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, July 28th. Boyfriend's plans for future are subject to mom's approval. Dear Abby, my adult granddaughter, Lola, is in a two-year relationship with a wonderful young man and has been anticipating a proposal. During a conversation, he mentioned he would not propose to her until he has introduced her to his parents who live in another state. He says his mother wants him to marry a woman who has never been married or divorced and who has not had a child. Lola is divorced due to her ex-husband's infidelity and has a young son. This seems to her to be a no-win situation if he won't propose until she's met his parents, but he lacks the courage to introduce her to them. What is my granddaughter to do? She's so unhappy and disappointed. Signed, Impossible in Texas. Dear Impossible, your granddaughter's boyfriend is a mama's boy. The decision of whom to marry should be his, not his mother's. If, after 2 years, he cannot summon up the courage to introduce her proudly to his parents, she should quit wasting her time with him because this romance will go no further than it already has. Dear Abby, I cannot seem to get over the loss of my first husband decades ago. I still think of him often. I am still grieving our divorce and his subsequent marriage to someone I've known for many years. They have happily gone on with their lives. I am a widow now. My second husband was like me, dumped by his first wife, and we cobbled a life together as best we could. My problem is I can't stop longing for my first husband. Logically, I know we'll never be together, even if he were free from his marriage to the other woman. How does one ever get beyond the grief from a marriage that made me feel happy, safe, and loved? Do others suffer for decades? I can't seem to move past the sadness, but would like to be free of these feelings before I pass away. Signed, Missing That Life. Dear Missing, you are stuck in a rut of your own making, grieving the loss of your first marriage because there's nothing else going on in your life to distract you. If you want to get beyond this, start finding other things to occupy your time and your thoughts. Explore special interest groups you can join and activities that will take you out into the community so you have less time alone to brood. And if that isn't enough, consider asking your doctor to refer you to a licensed mental health professional. Dear Abby, the past couple of years, I've given $300 to $400 in cash to my personal trainer and his therapist wife for their birthdays and Christmas. When I hand them the card, they will thank me for the card, but I never hear another word. How do I know they just didn't throw away the unopened card? Maybe I've insulted them with the cash, or someone pilfered it. Or is this a sign of the times? Signed, Bitter in the West. Dear Bitter, the next time you hand them their card, say, I hope you can use what's inside to get yourself something nice or have some fun, if you still want to continue giving them money, that is.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.